Thank you. All right. As Chair Gomez gets settled, Chair moves that House file, or yeah, we'll move the House file 3069 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Chair Gomez, to your bill.
Thank you very much, Chair Norris, and members of the committee. So House File 3069 establishes a local taxes advisory task force. So, you know, I think local option sales taxes are increasingly a tool that cities and counties are relying on to do to do basic capital improvements and other things in communities across the state. We actually, part of the Minnesota miracle was moving away from exactly this kind of funding mechanism that we're seeing the proliferation of, particularly in the last few years. You know, what the agreement that we made as a state, you know, which led to what was called the Minnesota miracle, was about the question which is before us today, I believe, Mr. Chair, which is, are we going to make a decision that somebody's access to things that they need, to government services, to government buildings, to community centers, to pools, to hockey rinks, to even, you know, to jails, to roads, to trails, is access to those public goods going to be dependent on one's proximity to a retail base or not? Is it going to be based on one's proximity to property tax base or not, to wealthy people or not? And so we have made a decision, and this is why we have certain, you know, policies in place, like fiscal disparities, like a progressive income tax code that we rely on as one of sort of the bedrocks of how we do public financing. And more we're kind of moving away from our history of equalization in Minnesota, and kind of putting more and more of the burden onto these tax tools, which are the most regressive in our toolbox. You know, sales taxes are the most regressive tax if you look at the tax incidence study, which means that, you know, because there's no income sensitivity, if you're a low-income person, then sales taxes constitute a larger percentage of your income, and so they just hit you harder than they do if you're a higher-income person. So in 2023, there is more. We've received more, $2.75 billion of proposals for local option sales taxes. And so, you know, I think that when I saw that, I was really alarmed, and you know, I have been kind of grappling with it, and I believe that we're at a point where there's really a need to take kind of a holistic look at local taxes, the interaction with what the state provides to our local partners, and to see, like, is this something that we want? Do we want to say, I mean, I don't want to pick on any of my my members, but like, if Bloomington, give Bloomington a half a cent sales tax with the Mall of America there, they'd never have to raise a property tax again. Is that fair? You know, well, there are communities across the state where there isn't a retail base for them to put a local option sales tax in place. And I'll just tell you, it's not communities like mine. Like, I have a giant retail base in my community. Frankly, if you probably look at the partisan kind of divide, it's like, in Democratic districts where we have greater retail bases on the whole, I would say, as this sort of urban-rural kind of divide has deepened over time in this sort of demographic shift we're seeing. So I think it's not a self-serving thing. It's not a partisan thing to me. It's really about, you know, what kind of a tax code are we going to have? Are we going to make the decision to leave behind our history of equalization, of saying that wherever a kid is born, whatever zip code they live in, they should have an equal access to the ingredients for a good life? Or are we going to go more and more in the direction of, you know, relying on tax tools that really are wildly inequitable across space. So House File 3069 would establish a local taxes advisory task force. This would meet over the interim and come bring recommendations to the legislature. And, you know, I think I've kind of said this, you know, I mean, one of the hard things about this is that this is allowing local option sales taxes is like an easy political decision for us. Carries no cost to the state general fund. There's no real political cost to us. And in a way, because it then puts the locals who also are in these hard positions where they have to make decisions. Are we going to raise levies to pay for public safety, for infrastructure, for, you know, for that new public services building that we know we so desperately need? It's a little bit of us shirking our responsibility as elected officials. And I mean, I don't know, maybe that's too harsh of a way to put it, but I think that's part of the reason for the proliferation of these, is because it takes the difficulty of making a decision to raise taxes off of elected officials. But again, it moves us on to the most regressive tax tools we have in our toolbox. It flies in the face of decades of equalization in the tax code in Minnesota, which, you know, is designed to ensure that all people, regardless of where they live and whether they live close to a, you know, big box retailer or a mall or whatever, that they have the things that they need for a good life. So, you know, I think that, I mean, you've probably heard me say this. It's like, I don't look at the tax bill as a place to give away goodies to people. I look at my responsibility as the chair of the tax committee, like, to look at the whole system and see how it is that we can make it as fair and equitable as possible. And so this is an effort in that direction. You know, this I think this is an issue that has that all tax chairs for sure for the last, I don't know, 6, 8, 10 years have had to deal with. But, you know, this is my shot. I may fail, as others have, but I'm giving it a try. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
We appreciate your courage, Chair Gomez. All right, to member discussion, and first up is Lee Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I really want to thank the chair for bringing this bill forward. I actually am a big supporter of doing this after we've passed the 40 that are before us this year. So very interesting, and I really appreciate your comments, and I do see where you're coming from. I come at it from a little different side here, a little different view. These are real projects, and I've got the list of them here, the real projects, real needs in these communities. Now, one could possibly argue that, well, the state has failed because the state hasn't just done all these things. I don't really buy into that, but it's been interesting over history. My good friends on the DFL side, as tax chairs, have generally, not always, but generally not supported these. That's been history. I mean, my good friend Carolyn Chesky and others really haven't supported these so much. And then when I get to be chair, then I support them. Then, of course, all the communities come running to the tax committee saying, would you do this, do this, do this? And, of course, I say yes on this issue, on these issues, I should say. So there's a lot of communities here that are really ready to go, and it's very, very bipartisan. I mean, I look like names like Freiberg and Pawlowski and Davids and you just go down the list of folks that have these. Representative Smith, in fact, I've got a bill in to do that. The only difference we have is I've included the Greg Davids good neighbor policy, like a good neighbor. Greg Davids is there in that one that the other one doesn't have. But this, you know, we can work on all these things. So it's very bipartisan on members wanting these, pushing these for their community. And one reason I really like them is because the voters have to pass them. This is an issue of local control. If the voters don't want it, don't vote for it. If the voters want it, vote for it and get. There's a lot of really good projects in here if you look up and down the list. And So why wouldn't we allow local voters to go forward with this? Chair Gomez, I like House File 3069. I think we should pass this bill to set this up for future. You know, what are the criteria? What do you need to come forward with? What do we need to do here? But we have, 40 or 40-some projects here that are ready to go, ready to get going with things that, in fact, I'm so bad that I put some bills in to say fund local ambulance services and fire halls with this because I don't believe you do that in the bonding bill because they're not regional significance. So you've probably seen some of those bills coming through here too, and I really believe that we need to give the local voters a chance to do this. And if the local voters say no, then you don't. If they say yes, then let's get the shovels out and get to work. So I think in what we may see down the road, I don't know exactly where that other body that we can't talk about, exactly where they're at on all this, but I really think, you know, we don't have the retail base necessarily, but we do have enough retail in these communities to do the projects that they want to do. And we're talking anything from jails to, I mean, you just go down the list of all the different things. And I don't think if you look at this, you'd say any of these are bad. But the issue is, how do we fund them? And Chair Gomez, you're looking at an alternate view on how to do it and setting up a task force to figure out how to do it. I would just say that, and I like this bill, I'd be voting for it, but I think we have enough here ready to go where the communities are depending on this. And yes, it does take pressure off the state legislature on this because they're actually doing it themselves. I kind of like that personal responsibility thing. And I think you mentioned that it's, you know, easy political decisions for us. How do you lose on that? I mean, that's awesome. I love easy. Easy is good. I'm probably the best at easy of any person here. And so, we've just got two different trains of thought here. And I certainly totally understand where you're coming from, Chair Gomez. I really do. I get it. On the one hand, on the other hand, is these folks are ready to go. Let's saddle up and get going on these things. So it'll be interesting to see how all this plays out. I saw it once where a tax chair wasn't doing these, and the committee actually came together because there's so many members on the committee that needed these things that the chair was overridden. Now, I'm not suggesting anything here. That we don't need any coups here or anything. I'm not saying that by any means. But stranger things have happened. So we'll just see how this plays out. And anytime I get overridden on things, I just think of what my mother taught me, that, Gregory, sometimes we just have to live with disappointment. That's the way it goes sometimes. So we'll see how it plays out. I really appreciate this bill coming forward. Of course, we're not voting on this today, but it was a straight-up vote today. I'd vote for it with the caveat that these cities that have put so much effort into these things could move forward with their projects, and then we set up a framework, and if we see something we want to change, we change it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Before Lee Davids instigates a coup on the Tax Committee, we'll quickly move on to Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a general question. Chair Gomez, you mentioned that we had $2.7 billion in potential requests. Do we know how many are... This would maybe be a question to research staff, and if, get back to me, that'd be fine. But do we have any idea how many are currently active and what kind of a revenue that's generating across the state?
Ms. Hagler, if you want to take
a
stab at that.
Mr. Chair and Representative Swedzinski, I do have a list. I forgot it with me.
Okay.
But if Mr. McQuillan has it, I might be able to tell you. Otherwise, I'll get back to you.
Sure. Thank you. So it would just be thank you.
Yeah, Representative Swedzinski.
What I'd be looking for is not just the general who, but also kind of what's the yearly generation, and then as they play out, you know, what does those totals add up to? You know, and I think, you know, one of the things that we look at is, you know, voter participation with these. How do we maximize that? And I think, you know, the legislature in its wisdom in the past has, dedicated that these occur on when it does happen. I know we're not debating these in general here with this bill, but when they do happen, that they happen when the greatest amount of voters will potentially come and vote. by having it on an election, a general election year where the natural inclination of people is to show up. And I think that's an important thing to keep in mind as these things are moving forward, that we encourage, you know, the basic, you know, participation with voters. But also, I would argue to all of our colleagues here in this committee, but to make sure that we're telling the whole story when we're presenting these to the voters. So not just the general cost of whatever the shiny object is that's going to be in our districts, but also what's the total cost going to be. You know, so not just, hey, this is your yearly payment, but this is what this will cost from principal and interest over the lifetime of this project. And I think those two numbers, I think, should be key on all these potentials that would go before the committee and get out to the voters, so that voters understand exactly what they're getting involved in. You know, it's nice to focus on the shiny object that we're going to build, but look at the current today's project of what it's going to cost, but then after the interest and after all the costs are paid for, what's the estimated cost at the end, so that people can say, is this really how I want to spend our dollars here in our community? And you know, those two things, and I too, if we were voting on this today, would be supporting this, Madam Chair, and appreciate your concern on these issues. These are important. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Swedzinski. I saw some spreadsheets flying around. I don't know if you've got an answer at your fingertips, Ms. Hagler, or you want to get back to us.
Mr. Chair and members, from the spreadsheet that Michelle just provided for me, it looks like the city's local sales tax in fiscal 21 generated just over $66 million. But that also includes some lodging, liquor, and food and beverage taxes, so more than just the general purpose local sales taxes. If the committee and Representative Swedzinski is looking for a little more detail of city by city, I can get that to the committee. 66.3 million, Mr. Chair.
Thanks, Ms. Hagler. To Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I am, Chair Gomez is co-author on this bill, even though I represent Bloomington. And I'll say that, you know, 2 years ago, I was, you know, my district represented part of Bloomington, part of Edina. Both cities wanted to bring forward local option sales taxes. Ultimately, Edina brought a proposal forward. Bloomington didn't, because neither I nor Representative Carlson nor Representative Howard, who represented different parts of Bloomington, were willing to sign on as authors to the bill. And the reason was that we saw that, you know, if Bloomington was allowed to do something like this, that the backlash would just be incredible. When the city of Edina pitched their local option sales tax, the big part of the pitch was, hey, why shouldn't we do this? 55% of this tax will be paid by non-Edina residents. That is the only reason why any city ever wants a local option sales tax, is that they know that that tax will be largely exported to non-residents. So we can talk about, you know, giving local voters the option to do this, but what basically you're giving your local voters the option to do is tax other people's voters. Now, in Bloomington's case, that figure would be 75%. 75% of the sales taxes raised in the city of Bloomington are paid by non-Bloomington residents. As the chair says, it's not fair. It creates a whole new fiscal disparity. Beyond that, I would say that I was a city council member in Bloomington for 9 years, was a very active and involved in the National League of Cities, chaired its study committee on community and redevelopment in 2009, gave me the opportunity to see, you know, look around the country to see how cities in different states around the country were financed and what the impact was. And gave me exposure to a University of Illinois professor named Michael Pagano, who used to do studies on this topic. One of his most famous ones was a cross-sectional study where he picked three states where cities were financed, you know, one mostly property taxes, one payroll taxes, one sales taxes, and he looked to see how does that influence municipal development strategy. And what he discovered is that I think the sales tax rate was, Oklahoma. I think he looked at Oklahoma City. And what he discovered is that in Oklahoma City, cities overzone for retail. They tend to zone the corners of their city for retail so that they can capture as much retail sales taxes from the surrounding cities rather and make sure they capture all of the stuff that's from their own city. You had one case study, actually a separate one, involving the city of Tempe, Arizona, that was so egregiously and obviously did that that the state legislature was forced to step in and require them to share their sales tax revenues with surrounding cities. He found that, you see that some of the same. Look at the Brainerd area. As soon as MnDOT built the 371 bypass around Brainerd, all of the retail migrated from Brainerd to Baxter, and now Baxter has a local option sales tax. Okay. So the distortive land use planning for a city, it's just incredible. I was on one trip, an NLC trip to Florida, southeast Florida, and the tour guide was a development director, and I kept noticing that all these empty storefronts and strip malls all over southeast Florida, and I asked her about it, and she said, "Oh yeah, you know, there's so much competition among the cities for sales tax revenue that we're over-retailed by 30%." And you're talking to riding on a train in Salt Lake City with next to a development director from the city of Scottsdale, Arizona, and she was complaining that she had just lost a car dealership to Tempe. And I said, "What do you mean by lost a car dealership? In Minnesota, we treat car dealerships like porn shops, and because they get in these states, they get to collect the motor vehicle sales tax basically and keep it locally." So I'm riding around on the train in Utah, and I'm noticing on all of these suburban Utah communities that there are car dealerships next to all the LRT stations. I asked one of the development directors, why aren't you putting transit-oriented development around your LRT stations? And she said, "Well, because car dealerships and big box retail provide the best sales tax revenue, even though they don't provide any ridership. And if there's no ridership, well, that's the regional transit agency's issue. It's not my issue." So it's just a bad, bad idea from so many different perspectives. And so I'm looking forward to participating on this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. Before we go to the next member, we've got a quick clarification from Ms. Hagler.
Mr. Chair and members, I apologize. The number is actually 163.5 million for all cities. That other number seemed very low to me, and I was looking at the wrong line, so it's 163.5 million.
Thanks, Ms. Hagler. Next is Representative Joy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. local option sales tax, I like it in my areas. I look at different things as the voters get to vote on it, and I understand it's a pass-through tax as people travel through our community. We're on Highway 10, and we see that. But it also gives it to the voters' choice. And it's a choice if you're going to purchase those products. You know, I look at when you don't tax things like clothing, and you look at Fargo and everybody goes over to West Acres and buy their clothes, and Moorhead doesn't have a mall anymore. We don't have a place to buy clothes. We have no tax on clothes, but it hasn't produced a bunch of buildings there. So local option, I think, is good. If people don't like it, they can change the local people sitting there, the mayors, the council, if they disagree with it. You know, we had a referendum passed this year on our school. It was a $53 million school remodel, and it passed by 8 votes. So there's 42% of those people that will pay for this school referendum of $53 million. They don't get a voice. So, you know, local option sales tax, again, I think is important. I think it is because it's a voice of the voters, and you can debate that, you know, maybe 42% of them don't want that. But it's also something you don't have to go purchase the items. When we buy groceries, we're not paying sales tax on it. So it's a choice of what you're buying. But with property tax, you're not. You're forced. So 8 people will pay for a $53 million school referendum. So I just want to voice my opinion. I think I agree with your task force. I hope, since it is usually bipartisan, right, in different sales tax options, I hope we work together as a bipartisan thing on there, and we can, you know, maybe get some new ideas coming out of it, but I'm a supporter for local option sales tax. Thank you.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to avoid talking about the Greg Daniels or David's good neighbor clause. I'm going to avoid it. going to avoid it. No, I'm just kidding. I do want to talk about, I, as many of us in both of our caucuses, I'm sure, sat in a office where my city officials came to me and said, this is a priority for us. And they talked about local option sales tax for Rochester. I am on the list. And as we were talking about it, I will, you know, our city is excited about it, not because they're super excited about sales taxes and that actual tax policy. It's because of the projects and the money they could have. They're excited about flood control. They're excited about fixing some of our roads. And I think the same is true with voters. When we give them a referendum, they're not excited about sales tax policy. They're excited for a new school or a new community center. And so I think why this is such a good idea, and getting back to what Chair said about eschewing our responsibility, is that we should be funding those things, but it shouldn't be funded inequitably. And that is what sales tax is doing. We know that from years and years and decades of data. That is an inequitable way for us to collect taxes as opposed to things like income taxes. And speaking of full picture, you know, we are in the tax committee, so we have to look at this as part of the whole of our taxes. And things like, I'm going to say the magic word, the Social Security tax exemption, taking away $1.3 billion of our revenue, is going to make sales taxes and property taxes like these go up and make these things more expensive. And even buying an argument that I don't normally buy, but I'll buy it for this argument, that will help needy seniors. Now they're going to be paying higher sales taxes to pay for the things that we should pay for using other revenue. So the larger picture, I agree, even though my city is desperately in need of a lost sales tax, that we're not going to get because of this. But we need to be able to fund these through more equitable angles, and we need to have it from a state perspective and use our money here at the state capitol more responsibly and not force local people to make those decisions that they sent us here to make.
All right. We are running a little bit behind on schedule, so I'm going to go to Representative Kosnick, and then we're going to wrap up the discussion on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Was there anybody from the public planning to testify? I was curious.
We didn't have anybody signed up to testify. Okay. We can see if there's anybody from the public who is here intending to testify. It does not look like anybody.
Well, my point is, appreciate that, and if somebody does want to testify, hopefully they are afforded the opportunity. Two things. This task force is for cities and counties, but doesn't include school districts. Is that true? And the second question is the makeup of the task force to have kind of, as you mentioned, an equitable history. It may be more equitable, or if the author could discuss only three members of each body, but then only one member from the League of Minnesota Cities and the Association of Counties. I might suggest friendly equal members from each body, like four from each body, and then an odd number of members increased to the League of Minnesota Cities and the counties, maybe, so it'd be like 15 members if you did four members of the each body of the legislature and three from each of the other associations, because we should be looking for their input on because that's they're more of the experts on how it may affect them. Equal members from each body would probably provide you more consensus within the legislature on the task force recommendations. So if you could talk about cities not or schools not being included, and then the makeup of the membership, because it looks kind of partisan to me right now that you might not get as much buy-in down the road.
Chair Gomez.
Yeah, thank you. So and in terms of the members of the House, what I've seen is that this is somewhat typical, having, you know, an equal membership from each body, and then the. But you're talking about having equal numbers of the minority and the majority in each. We can talk more about the membership of this committee. It's a potentially a good point about the school boards. Because this is really concerning local option sales tax and kind of, you know, tangentially maybe lodging and food and bev taxes, and those schools aren't directly, you know, kind of coming to the voters and asking for support for their projects using those tools, that they all have independent, like, or they have their levy situation that's separate from these. It hadn't occurred to me, but I mean, I'm happy to talk to you more about it. About, you know, this bill's going to be laid over, so there's certainly time to modify the membership of it. And I'm happy to have a follow-up conversation with Representative Kosnick on those issues.
All right. Any closing comments, Chair Gomez?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and for a good discussion. And hopefully we won't have a mutiny, but stay tuned.
All right. And with that, Chair Gomez renews her motion that House File 3069 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. House File 3069 is laid over.
All right, next up, House File 209, Representative Bonner. So I'm going to move that House File 209 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Representative Bonner, to your bill.
All right. Thank you, Chair Gomez. Just a second to have presentation up here. All right. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I do want to say a quick shout out and say thank you. You may notice we have a very distinguished audience today. So I want to thank all of our veterans for their service and for being here today in support of this bill. With that, we will get to it. Madam Chair and members, as you know, when the U.S. Bank Stadium and home of the Minnesota Vikings deal was struck, that deal included the use of charitable gaming taxes to pay down the state's portion of the stadium bonds. While revenues were initially off to a slow start, the growing popularity of e-pull tabs took off. With a minor dip during the pandemic, revenues generated came back strong. Opening a dream state we did not imagine possible, paying off our stadium debt early. Estimates put the savings to the state around $46 million, giving Minnesota a unique opportunity to do the right thing, the fiscally responsible thing, and pay off our debt early, and with the ability to free up funds for other potential purposes. The revenue making all of this possible came from charitable gaming revenues generated by paper and electronic pull tabs, as well as the traditional bingo and tip boards. The organizations doing this work do so for the express purpose to use the revenues for charitable work in our communities. A small sample in my region includes the great work of the Osseo Lions, the Osseo Maple Grove American Legion, the Osseo Fire Relief Association, Osseo Maple Grove Hockey Association, also known as OMGHA, and then the Northwest JCs, as well as many, many more. These groups fund equipment for firefighters, they youth hockey programs, and everything from playgrounds to a plethora of charitable missions, making our communities a better place. That is why among the first bills I brought forward when I came into office was a bill to reduce the charitable gaming taxes and allow these great organizations to keep more money on their mission. While the tax bill was carefully, the bill was carefully crafted with stakeholders since its introduction, one thing has fundamentally changed. While the revenues generated continue to soar year after year in their growth, and the expenses of charitable gambling organizations have soared as well, leaving ever-shrinking margins to fulfill their charitable work. I think we would all agree the programs that funded these tremendous opportunities we now have before us to make fiscally sound decisions are now the very organizations that need our help to continue to help our beloved communities thrive. Members, I would ask you to join me in helping these incredible organizations to once again be leaders in our community, and let us imagine the great possibilities and the difference they can once again make. And with that, I do have a testifier as well.
Excellent. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. Good afternoon. My name is Alan Lund. I'm the member and gambling manager of the Osseo Maple Grove American Legion. I'm here today to ask for your support of House File 209. We have one site for charitable gambling, which is our post home. Charitable gambling is an important tool that allows us to do even greater outreach in our community. Our patrons enjoy winning, but even when they don't, they know that the dollars that they have lost stay in our local community. Our priorities with the proceeds of charitable gambling are food insecurity, youth, and veteran active duty personnel. In calendar year 2022, we put over $200,000 to work in our community. Charitable gambling pays state gambling tax on our net receipts, which is sales minus prizes. We get no deductions of any kind on our tax liability. Over the years, our ability to serve has diminished. Our costs increase every year, but those increases can only come from one place, and that is our bottom line. We don't have the ability to adjust our prices due to inflation. If the $1 pull tab in 2000 had kept pace with inflation, it would sell for $1.75 today, but it still costs $1 in our post. In fiscal year 2022, we paid $250,000 in taxes and fees to the state. That represents 32% of every dollar that we deposit. The state is currently our largest benefactor of our fundraising efforts. House File 209, if passed in its current form, would lower our annual tax liability by roughly $30,000. That money would go directly into our community. It would be of great benefit to those that we serve. I again thank you for the opportunity and ask for your support of House File 209.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Lund. I have a couple other testifiers on the list.
We do. We have two additional testifiers, and I will add, Madam Chair, that Al is being very humble here, but he is the whole reason we are here. After approaching me 4 years ago with piles of spreadsheets, he clearly knew his data and his facts, and so I am grateful to him for being here today.
Thank you for that, Representative Rachel Jenner. Excellent. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Rachel Jenner. I am the Executive Director of Allied Charities of Minnesota. We represent the licensed charities that conduct lawful gambling in Minnesota. First, I'd like to thank Representative Bonner for her support of charities and bringing forth this bill to provide us with tax relief. There are approximately 1,115 licensed charities who, as you've heard, are made up of veteran service organizations such as VFWs and American Legions, fraternal and civic organizations, youth sports, and a variety of other charities serving Minnesota. Last year, we paid $180 million in taxes to the state of Minnesota, which was our largest expense. And the taxes have been an ongoing concern because with progressive tax rates, each year that our revenue increases, our taxes also increase. Last year, our taxes increased 50% from the year before, and the same was true in 2021. As an industry, our average tax rate now exceeds 30%. So for a number of years, we have paid more in taxes than we've had available for donations, and this trajectory is one that appears to be continuing. The state is by far the biggest benefactor of the funds that we raise, and without significant tax relief, this will continue to be the case. So compared with the $180 million that we paid in taxes in 2022, our donations were $131 million, nearly $50 million less. In our local communities, these donations are providing countless programs and infrastructure that has no other funding. Many charities in small towns are the only ones with the funds to support the various requests that are arising. They're paying for extracurricular activities, a furnace for a family who's struggling financially, fire trucks, youth sports, hockey rinks, and updating playgrounds at local parks. They're also grooming the snowmobile trails that bring in tourism for their small town. There are many VFW and American Legions throughout Minnesota providing community space and veteran programs that would cease to exist without the profits of charitable gambling. We have become a vital part of Minnesota. So we are asking for reduced taxes in order to better fulfill these missions. We are seeing inflation, rising costs on all fronts, and the burden of our tax structure has many organizations worried about their future. The tax rates that we have now were put in place to fund U.S. Bank Stadium, and that obligation has been met. In fact, the state is now considering releasing the city of Minneapolis from their portion of the stadium funding because of the excess funds that we have contributed. So we would ask that you would reduce the taxes that we are paying and allow us to better serve our communities. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Ms. Jenner. Next, we have one more testifier, if you would come up. Welcome to the committee. Good to see you. Thanks. Please just introduce yourself as you're getting going.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Matt Faburin, he/him, Executive Director of the Aliveness Project, a community center for people living with HIV and AIDS. We serve thousands of people living with HIV throughout the state with hot meals, food banks, supportive services to ensure people living with HIV can live long and healthy lives. We're able to provide these services and keep our doors open because of the revenue that we generate through our charitable gaming operations. Thanks to the many Minnesotans who come and play our pull tabs or go to our drag bingo nights, we're able to raise these funds. And thanks to the Minnesotans who know, even if I don't win tonight, at least my dollar is going to go to support people in need. Unfortunately, what Minnesotans don't understand is most of that dollar doesn't actually go back to the charities. In the past year, Aliveness gave 25% of our net revenue to the state in taxes and fees. That means that we give more back to the state than we have to invest into our mission. And there's no business in the state of Minnesota that pays that level of tax. And as a result, we've paid back the Minnesota Vikings Stadium 20 years early. Thanks to the Aliveness Project, the American Legions, we have paid that stadium back for you. And we're here today because we need help. We need your help. We have done everything that we were asked to do. We raised the revenue. We paid off the stadium. And now this session, you have a choice. You have an opportunity to reduce these taxes and to allow these funds to go back into our communities and to improve people's lives. And so we ask you today to vote in support of nonprofit tax reduction and the people that we serve. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tabirin, for being here. All right, two member discussion.
Madam
Representative
Chair.
Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have an amendment.
Absolutely, yep. So you have, Representative Robbins, did you want to move your DE1?
Yes, I wasn't sure if that was the time. So I moved the DE1. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Great. Please, to your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I hope that this amendment will be considered a friendly amendment. I have also been working on this issue, and basically it takes the combined tax receipts into a flat tax of 5%, and it would really help all of the charities keep more of their money, as we've already heard from the many great testifiers. And it also addresses the issue under the current structure, which is graduated, that as revenue goes up, your tax payments increase. Under a flat tax, that would not be the case. So it would help people keep more of their money in their communities, which I know Representative Bonner and I have both heard from so many of our charities. So since my bill was not able to get a hearing, I wanted to offer this as a friendly amendment to hopefully let more money stay in the communities and help these local charities. In my district, and I know in Representative Bonner's district, some of these charities are on the brink of going out of business because they pay so much in taxes, and because they owe property taxes and they cannot use this their gaming revenue for that. And I have a couple charities in my district that are on the brink of folding, so this would be a tremendous boon to them.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. We'll go to Representative Bonner and then to further member discussion. So, Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And while I certainly appreciate the intent of this amendment, I must say that the bill before you, House File 209, has been carefully crafted over the past 4 years in collaboration and consultation with charitable gaming experts, the Gambling Control Board expertise, as well as a former tax chair. The amendment dropped last night at about 5 p.m. has not been vetted in consultation with my stakeholders or experts at this time. I also did not receive any communication from the author wishing to collaborate or discuss changes to the current bill. And for these reasons, I want to respectfully ask members to vote no on the DE amendment.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I want to remember to ask for a roll call.
All right.
Thank
Representative
you.
Robbins has requested a roll call. There will be.
And to the point that Representative Bonner raised, we actually did meet once earlier in the session, and I heard you were working on this, and I asked to collaborate, and I never did hear back. But secondly, I have worked with charities on this throughout my district. I actually have three bills on this. One would zero out the charitable gaming tax. One has the flat tax of 5%. And then I have a third bill that also didn't get a hearing. That would allow veterans organizations to use some of their charitable gaming as an allowable expense for improvements to their real property, because so many charitable veterans organizations are having trouble maintaining their property. And again, none of my bills were given a hearing, so this is my only opportunity to plead my case. So that's why I'm bringing the amendment. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members.
You're right. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to speak in favor of both the amendment and the bill in general. The taxes on these nonprofits, essentially, to me are sort of outrageous and have been. And I know it was set up originally to pay off the stadium, but that's done. Nonprofits, by its nature, generally wouldn't pay income taxes because they're nonprofits. This is different in the sense of gambling, but. We all know that Minnesota is one of just a handful of states that has our casinos in the state are essentially a monopoly, and they do not pay any income taxes, and yet we're asking our charities to pay up to 36% income taxes, and the charities are doing things that help our communities as a whole. So I want to just say thank you for bringing this bill, and I'd prefer Representative Robbins' amendment, but any kind of tax breaks we can give is good. Thank you.
Thank you. I just want to say, you know, I'm uncomfortable with referring to a monopoly when the sovereign nations that share geography with this country or with this state to whom we have trust responsibilities have it as an economic development tool that has been reserved for them after the entire land base was taken. So just wanted to say that. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, just building on that, the comment was made about them not paying taxes, but I mean, they're separate sovereign. It's because sovereignty, right? So, you know, that's kind of how that works. So, but thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Joy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Bonner, this is a good bill. I mean, I think it's great when we can reduce the taxes on these charitable and stuff like that. In my community, our fire hall runs the pull tabs, and we bought a fire truck with our money. But last month, they paid $18,000 in taxes on theirs. I would, you know, as we talk about not having local sales tax or taking the options of that away, you know, we have to have somewhere to be able to have these groups fund these, and we got to quit taxing them, you know, because they do contribute to the communities. They do fire halls. They do all these things. You know, again, we look at it, the Viking Stadium is being paid off quick because of this. This is a great thing. I think it's great. I think Representative Robbins' reduction is, her amendment's great. I had a bill, too, and I think I signed on to hers to even reduce these more. I think it's important to take more and more of this and give it back to them so they can use it for our communities. You know, so, again, I thank you, the author, for that, and I just think we need to continue working on dropping the sales tax rate for everyone. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
You know, I'll I was going to say something in dispute of what you said, but I'm gonna leave it because I think we have a big disagreement about that. There are many, many states where there are casinos that are way beyond tribal boundaries in many states, and there are states where where tribal casinos pay income taxes. So it's different in Minnesota. It was set up, I think, under Perpich, and it's remained that way. And I would stand by my comment that there is a monopoly in this state, and they don't pay any income taxes. So thank you.
Okay, so we're going to go to a vote shortly. I do just want to mention that, you know, I guess I haven't usually seen a DE amendment on another member's bill, certainly in the tax committee like this, so it is unorthodox, but, you know, but here we are. I understand that you know, this was, that you wanted to talk about your bill, and glad we've had a chance to have that conversation. Do you want to, just any last words, if we could just keep it pretty brief, though we have a couple members who need to take
Nope, I appreciate Representative Bonner working on this, and I do plan to support her bill, and I ask for support for the amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. A roll call has been requested. Ms. Savas, chair votes no.
Chair Gomez, no. Vice Chair Norris.
No.
Vice Chair Norris, no. Lead Davids.
Aye.
Lead Davids, yes. Lead Representative Egbaje.
No.
Representative Egbaje, no. Representative Anderson.
Yes.
Representative Anderson, yes. Representative Brand, abstain. Representative Elkins.
No.
Representative Elkins, no. Representative Howard.
No.
Representative Howard, no. Representative Joy.
Yes.
Representative Joy, yes. Representative Kosnick. Abstain. Representative Lee.
No.
Representative Lee, no. Representative Lislegarde, excused. Representative Olson B, excused.
Oh.
Olson B.
Olson B.
Representative Olson L.
No.
Representative Olson L, no. Representative Pinto.
No.
Representative Pinto, no. Representative Robbins.
Yes.
Representative Robbins, yes. Representative Smith.
No.
Representative Smith, no. Representative Swidzinski.
Aye.
Representative Swidzinski, aye. Representative Wiener.
Yes.
Representative Wiener, yes. Representative Witte.
Yes.
Representative Witte, yes. Representative Joachim.
No.
Representative Joachim, no. There are 7 ayes and 10 nays.
There being 7 ayes and 10 nays, the motion does not prevail and the DE one is not adopted. To the underlying bill, House File 209, we're on member discussion. Representative Howard.
Chair Gomez, Representative Bonner, and I guess this might be a question for House Research. It was referenced to sort of the growing revenue being generated. I'm just curious, we have information on what's driving that. Is it paper pull tabs? Is it e-pull tabs? What's sort of the source of the escalating revenue?
I saw that Representative Bonner has her hand up. We'll let her go, and then if we need to go to House Research, we will. Representative Bonner.
I can tell you, thank you, Representative Howard. That's an excellent question. Initially, paper pull tabs used to be sort of in the lead for many, many years. But as we've seen, year over year, electronic pull tabs have actually started to emerge as sort of the front runner that's really driving some of that increase as well. But you do see an overall trend where all forms of revenue have continued to grow. But that said, it's important to note that while they've generated almost $1 billion in revenue, that these organizations also paid $192 million in their receipts and only brought in a net profit of about $323 million. So there's a growing disparity in that equation. So that's why we're here today.
Representative Howard.
Thank you, Chair and Representative Howard. That was my guess, and I know that the technology has been changing in that front in terms of the e-pull tabs piece. And so thank you. That's helpful.
Thank you. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and that was the question I was going to ask, too, but I just wanted to thank Representative Bonner for years of work on this and collaboration, because that's sometimes what good bills take to get across the finish line. And yes, DEs being called friendly also annoys me and has been happening in my committee as well. So thank you for your work on this, and look forward to this getting in the final bill.
Thank you, Representative Joachim. Is there any other further member discussion before we go to Lead Davids? No. Representative Wiener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Although I would have liked the amendment, any cut in the charitable contributions from, or the, you know, charitable gambling taxes is a good thing. Our local legions, Lions, rely on this money very heavily. And in discussions with them, you know, any cut now is good, and I would hope that in the future we would look at another cut to help all these charitable groups. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I support the Bonner bill. I think that the amendment would have made it better. I had a bill, or I have a bill, that is this pretty much the same as the Robbins Amendment. So I think we can do a little better, but that doesn't mean you don't support House File 209, which I do support. In 2017, the House position in the tax bill was to really lower the tax amount on charitable gaming so that the locals could keep more. That was in the House bill. It was the House position. As we move forward, I kind of ran into a buzzsaw with the other body because there were folks in the other body that made the argument that these entities were set up to raise money for the state, which I found interesting. I disagree with it, but I think it should be more raising money for the local charities. But that's what we ran into there, and so it was not in the conference report, which I have regretted because I think it should have been in the conference report. But woulda, shoulda, coulda, it wasn't. So we have a chance now to do the right thing here, and I'm very glad to support House File 209.
All right. Representative Bonner, any closing comments for us?
I want to thank the body here for their comments and encouragement, and particularly David's. You know, this bill does represent a bit of a middle way. I've spent 4 years analyzing all of the proposals on both the House and Senate side, looking at what was reasonable, working with tax chairs, and probably driving poor Chair Marquardt crazy behind the scenes on this particular issue. But I will say that one good thing about this bill is it has generally had great support in a bipartisan fashion. In fact, some of its champions in the past, I will just read a very brief list, is Nelson, Limmer, Anderson, Anderson P., Detmer, Davids, Lucero, Nash, Kreisha, Daniel, Swadzinski, Green, Albright, Franzen, McDonald, Bennett, Barr, Grossel, Gunther, New, Frank, Juergens, Marquardt, and Lilly, of course, among some of the bigger ones. But that said, at the end of the day, I think Lead Davids hit it on the head. This bill, we have had a tremendous opportunity in being able to do great things, in paying off the stadium early, to be in a place where we can save the state $46 million and pay off our debt almost 20 years early. And in that, we have generated about $1 billion a year, according to the February 2023 forecast, for the state, which is phenomenal. But if we look at the actual numbers, what we find is that in many cases, we have organizations paying more in tax than they're actually able to use on their mission, which was their actual intended purpose, right? To help serve our communities. And like Representative Joy, my community has a fire station in Osseo. They have some challenges in having funding with a lower tax base there, but folks have been able to step in, help make sure that they have respirators and equipment and the essentials that they need to do their job. And that story plays out in smaller communities and communities, frankly, across the state. So for that reason, I do hope that members will support this bill today and include it in the final bill.
Thank you so much, Representative Bonner. With that, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 209 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill, and it is laid over. All right, next up on the agenda, switching to David's Day and taxes, House File 2982. Representative Davids, would you like to move that House File 2982 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Excellent. Rep. Davids has moved that his bill be laid over. To your bill, Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you so much for hearing this bill here today. In December of 2022, there is a tragic fire in Spring Grove, and I believe the actual temperature is minus 20 degrees. If you take the picture that's included in your packet, you will see what minus 20 degrees does to a firefighter, a building, and fire hoses. The Spring Grove Fire Department, the other surrounding mutual aid fire departments came to Spring Grove to fight this fire and did an amazing job. There's about three buildings, basically, two and a half, they say, three buildings were lost. And what this bill does is it gives a disaster recovery of $250,000 to the city of Spring Grove for remediation costs. That's what the bill does.
Excellent. Thank you, Representative Davids. Any testifiers? Somehow it's just us suddenly.
Well, I'm here with all my friends. but Spring Grove offered to come up. And
yeah, it's just, long.
One thing, they're in the state basketball tournament, which is pretty cool. Yesterday they won 39-38 versus Mankato. So I think Representative Brand's gone, isn't he?
He
so
is.
I think it's okay to bring that up at this point. So they offered to come, and I said no. I said I think this is pretty straightforward. I think we can you can stay at your jobs for today, and we'll work from here.
Sounds good. Is there any member discussion on 2982? Not seeing any. Any final words for us, Representative Davids?
I'm hoping that this can be included in the omnibus tax bill.
Excellent. Representative Davids is going to renew his motion that House File 2982 be laid over for possible inclusion in the tax bill, and it is laid over. Next up, 2819. Representative Davids isn't going anywhere. Would you like to move your bill?
So move, Madam Chair.
Excellent. Representative Davids has moved that House File 2819 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. To your bill, Representative Davids.
And thank you very much for hearing this bill, House File 2819. We've seen these before in this committee, and there's precedents in the state, whether it be, I think, Medillia, Wadena, other communities that have had disasters in their community. And what's really so nice about this one in Spring Grove is they're doing everything they can try to do to build back. The buildings that were lost, the business that were lost, it's a very strong, tight-knit community, and they are trying to come together to put this together. If they do put it together, what this bill would do is waive sales tax on building supplies. And we've seen these before, and Spring Grove that went through this. I can't say enough to thank the firefighters. I don't know how they didn't lose the whole town. But they were able to confine things at 20 degrees below. They basically lost three buildings, but that's a lot better than losing 25 buildings. So my hat's off to the Spring Grove and mutual aid firefighters in that area. So this would simply, and we've had these before, would simply say that they don't have to pay sales tax on their construction materials if they're able to rebuild.
Thank you very much, Representative Davids. Any discussion? Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question to Representative Davids. How many jobs were lost when those buildings were burnt down? Is there a rough estimate on the businesses that were impacted or that sort of thing?
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Swedzinski. Jobs, I can get you that number. I'm saying maybe 10 to 15, but what really hurt the town, I mean, this is a smaller town, was there's apartments above there, and there was several families that were displaced, and that's something we're trying to help those folks with also. So I'll get you an exact number, but it was, you know, it's a very vibrant hardware store and a Napa store and, some, you know, right in that area there. So if this can be an encouragement for someone to build back, I think it'd be very helpful.
All right. Thank you. Any further discussion? Not seeing any final words? Or it was Spring Grove / Representative Davids Day?
You know, if I would have been thinking, and it just doesn't happen that often, but if I had been thinking, I would have treated the committee to Spring Grove Pop. I think I need to do that at some point.
Yeah, well, we'll take a rain check on that, Representative Davids.
I'll bring some Spring Grove Pop. It's just delicious. I don't know if you want grape or strawberry rhubarb. Or
yes. Yeah, we'll give
You decide. I'll bring them. You decide.
I like the idea of strawberry rhubarb myself. You know, that's a unique flavor. Anything, any unique taste from your area, we would love to have.
And that will be done. And in closing comments, as the great Colin Ray said, that's my story. And I'm sticking to it.
Thank you very much, Representative Davids. And with that, Representative Davids will renew his motion that House File 2819 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill, and it is laid over.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. So that concludes the business of the committee for the day. Our next meeting will be Tuesday, March 28th, and we'll see you then. We are adjourned.